The following program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. Our phone number today is 805-549-8855. Here's Elizabeth Barrett.
Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I've been really conflicted about how to address what's happening in the country right now, and really unsure of how to proceed, if I were to be honest. I want to make sure that I don't say the wrong thing, but I also don't want to be silent. I'm wondering that at this point in time, if I can be of any help or any service. We've spent a lot of weeks together in sheltering in place and talking about the pandemic and talking about our mental health and well-being. And then this happened, protests and disruption and fear and sadness and an overwhelming sense of everything feeling like it's unraveling and out of control. And I was thinking about what to do today. I kept wondering if maybe in the spirit of Blackout Tuesday that I maybe should put the show on pause for this week in spirit of the movement to make space for other voices other than my own. But while I was kind of grappling with what direction to go with the show this week and wondering if it was appropriate to have a show this week or what I would actually say, I was reading different posts and watching different videos and trying to tune in what was going on. And then Ozo Motley went live from the LA protests yesterday, and one of the band members was there just walking the streets and showing what was happening and talking about what's going on. And this really set up the direction for me for today's show. And so to kind of get you where I am, let's play a little bit of what I heard yesterday from Ozo Motley on their Instagram Live.
Folks, your doctor in Dub and Dab. I couldn't do the show today. I had to come out here, show solidarity with the people. Coming together.
But if I can't hear it,
using our constitutional rights of peaceful assembly, you see all kinds of people here. Ozo Motley, we've been in this since the beginning. And it's sad that we're still here, but here we are. We're right here off of Highland and Hollywood. How y'all doing? Joining all the people out here. The crowd has been very peaceful. I've yet to see anybody tripping. I've yet to see anybody trying to break anything. There are businesses that are boarded up and a lot of graffiti, but nope. I don't see nobody nutting up as of yet. As you can see from the crowd, this is obviously, of course, Black Lives Matter and the movement and the way things have affected people of color through the history. But this is obviously an issue that all walks of life, all cultures, all people, black, white, red, yellow, brown, whatever's, it's obviously an issue that's resonating with everybody because everybody at one point or another might have had experience with it. We're about to hit La Brea. I'm going to take my phone off and be here for the moment. Thank you, everybody. Ozil Motley up in the mix here. Gotta have skin in the game, folks, for change to happen sometimes. Much love, peace.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you're just tuning in, that was audio from the LA protests yesterday, Ozil Motley live. And while I was listening to that and watching it yesterday, I remembered that I had had the opportunity to speak with Raul Pacheco, one of the founding members of Ozil Motley, a few years ago at Live Oak. And as it would happen, much of our conversation that day focused around their commitment as a band to social justice and activism. And so I thought the best way to spend this hour today was to revisit parts of that conversation that I had with Raul to bring his voice forward. And also as a reminder to myself that there are a lot of ways that we can show up and participate, even if we're not sure of what exactly to say, even if we're not the person leading or guiding the conversation. But to do what we can to bring voices to the forefront. And if you're not familiar with Ozil Motley or their music and their commitment to social activism and social justice, I wanted to play for you a good amount of their song, War Coming, so you can get a sense of where they are and how they feel about the cultural revolutions and what people need to know. So here's War Coming by Ozil Motley. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
We see a coming war.
Imagine this world with no oppression and no need to dabble in greed and transgression. The solution for murder and prostitution never glorified as pollution on television, corrupt an entire nation. Explicit images never free and mumia regardless of proven innocence. Turning to crime and not using intelligence. What makes me wonder sometimes, are we in hell or inches away from confronting the powers that be? So in seconds, what is taking some hours to see? Tips is hot enough to melt a bullion. More than a million people are ready for rebellion. Still sunset till the crack of dawn. If you're back a blonde, Uncle Sam is robbing you blind and putting shackles on the minds of your children. For real, son, beware this system and go to war with this institution. Should not see. Medical benefits should be cheap if not free, right? The richest people are those without morals, cause once they get inside, they tend to keep the door closed. Lord knows they're killing us quick and clean, from base heads to people addicted to nicotine. Man-made diseases with skin cells corrode to ones where if infected, you die from common colds. Economical woes, they pose the true threat, using your tax dollars to sell and produce death. What's left? We got guns and drug trafficking. Governmental be backing and blaming Latin and African brothers for dirty works done. They do not only hurt young, but it's provoking revolutionary circum. Stances slow like molasses. This is a message to the masses. Never ask kiss.
You've been listening to Ozil Motley's Coming War. And I wanted you to hear this so you can get an understanding of the passion that this band has had for over 25 years in speaking out for social justice causes and being activists. And so I'm going to share with you my conversation in pieces with Raul Pacheco. We were backstage at Live Oak Music Festival just a few years ago. And at that time, we were dealing with immigration issues, and the Black Lives Matter protests had really been peaking. And so it made sense that our conversation would kind of focus on what was happening in the moment. And it's interesting that here we are 4 years later, and the conversation is just heating up. it hasn't gone away. And as Ralph said in our conversations, the movement has never gone away. It just keeps peaking in different ways. So you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And although we won't be opening up the phone lines today, you can still be part of this conversation by participating on our Facebook page or Instagram. Today, we're honoring Blackout Tuesday and trying to keep the self-promotions to zero. But if you'd like to send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, I'm always happy to hear from you, or we can continue posting and having conversations later in the week. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast this show if you'd like to listen at a later date and it's your convenience. Just go to wherever you access podcasts, search A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the show will be there for you to listen to. So we're going to jump into my conversation with Raul Pacheco from Ozamotli. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. So we're backstage with Raul from Ozamotli, and between gigs from Ozo Kids to your main stage performance tonight. And Raul, can you start off talking a little bit about Ozamotli in general and the group's history? Just brief for people who don't know your work at all.
We're a band from Los Angeles that's been together for 22 years. We started at a labor protest, and I think, you know, the first things we used to do was just play for people to raise money and causes that we liked. And once we started playing shows in clubs and stuff, then, you know, it became like a real job. Mm-hmm. And we have 3 Grammys. We've traveled to 56 countries. We've been U.S. cultural ambassadors. And we're still playing music and still having fun.
So when you first started, I mean, let's even go back to growing up. Did you grow up playing an instrument, thinking I'm going to be a musician someday?
I think music just made me happy. So you know, no one in my family was a musician, but there was a lot of music just like on a stereo being played in the house, and a lot of different styles of music. And I used to sing around the house. I was encouraged to join the school choir in elementary school, so I was in choir till you know, right up until high school, and then I started playing guitar. So, but I never thought I was going to be committed and do this until, you know, in my mid-20s, really.
So you didn't grow up with the rock star fantasy that a lot of people talk about?
Yeah, I had them. Okay. You know, I had them. And I think I made some bold decisions when I was young to kind of, you know, I went to kind of a high school that had a lot of expectations. I mean, I actually went to Thatcher, which is around.
Did.
Yeah.
You knew
and,
that.
You know, I didn't go to college right after that. And that was a real kind of a trippy thing, even for my family, because my father was like, why'd you go to school like that? I just was happy playing guitar, you know. And I did a few other things. And then I became, you know, kind of more politically motivated. And I went back to school to, I was studying political science. I was thinking about writing about California politics, especially like Chicano political history in the state, and maybe law school. I was working at campaigns, but every time I picked up the guitar, I was much happier. And so at one point, I guess I was about 25, I said, I think I got to just do this and not worry about anything else.
So what time in history, because you look so young, yeah, so yeah. What was happening in LA at the time that you came through college and what was happening in the Chicano community?
I mean, I don't think there was anything different that doesn't happen now. It's really, I think, most issues in the community where I'm from is mainly, you know, economic differences, racial differences, and in this country and in the world and in society in general, I think, you know, if you have money, you have a very different experience than if you don't. And if you are not the racial makeup of the dominant culture, you have a very different experience than if you are. So I don't think it's any different than when I grew up. And what was happening, I mean, what I considered, you know, the LA uprising just happened in 93. But, you know, I was called a Chicano since I was a kid. And it wasn't, and there was a movement out of the neighborhood I grew up in, Los Angeles and Boyle Heights, that was, you know, built around an established community that was there long enough to kind of have an identity. And, you know, and I think that identity is something that people have had to really fight for in many different ways. So I don't think it's any different.
So is that a frustrating thing to realize that things aren't any different, or does it feel like there's any movement?
Yeah, I think there's always a movement where I'm at. And I think there's always a movement around the world if you want to get into issues that where you want to create momentum over certain things. But I think I'm very different in my experience. I have found, because I had a lot of experience. I had a lot of experience outside of the community since I was young. I was in a boys' choir from the age of 8 to 14 that exposed me to all different kinds of kids, all different kinds of economic backgrounds, all different kinds of experiences in LA, which is very, I'm very grateful for that, because it allowed me to go to a place like high school. I went to high school called Thatcher in Ojai.
How did that come about? Was it a scholarship, or your parents knew about it? Essentially,
you know, I had a teacher who, in the middle school I was in, and who just, you know, if he thought you could have a different experience, he kind of offered it. Mm-hmm. And so there was a group of us from there that, you know, kind of a Mr. Mitchell, yeah, and he just thought, you know, that I think one of his contributions was, you know, you need to get out of this community and to experience something different. And I don't think it was from a place of like, you know, your community's bad. I think every kid needs to get out of their community.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the issues and one of the reasons why there's a lot of conflict, because it's difficult for us to have empathy and to have an understanding of another and to be kind of basically human with one another. When we see the basic difference as rich as, oh, that's bad or that's good or something, it's like, oh, I can't go to that neighborhood, because yes, you can. Yes. And I'm lucky that I've had these experiences, because I'm a Chicano from Boyle Heights who goes anywhere I want. And when I meet kids where I grew up, and I say, you can, or anybody who has those feelings for any reason, you can go anywhere you want. But there is a different language, and there is a different set of way people communicate in these different spaces. There's different identities in these spaces, but they're attainable and in any forum. And I think just like someone who's feels like a foreigner, it helps when you learn a little bit about where you're at. That's my whole thing. And I think if you know, gentrification, what is called gentrification, is happening all over in every city in the world. It's happening. Shanghai, I've been to interior China. It's crazy to see what's happening in a city like Wuhan that's no one ever heard of 10 million people. There's a bunch of 10 million people cities in the middle of China that no one ever heard of, and they're going through the same stuff. It's haves, have-nots, it's distribution of wealth, it's you know, how you're forced out of where you grow up sometimes, because you know, there's a lot of pressure in Boyle Heights right now, and in Los Angeles, it's happening everywhere. And Boyle Heights are strong, really militant. There's a whole group that's very militant. There was a coffee shop that opened, you know, a new style coffee shop, what they call Third Wave.
Oh, really?
That's what it's called. You know, these new coffee shops with nitro coffee and high-end espresso, and it costs, you know, $10 for coffee and blah, blah, blah. And they're, you know, they're white people. You know, and for me, that's not an issue, But the issue is that there is a disconnect in the people who are even experienced that. So there's no like connection. So some people feel offended by that who've been there, because they can see this is going to change my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, and they will. There's a militant aspect to Boyle Heights, because they have a long experience of political resistance, really, in their perspective, So, yeah, I mean, I was reading this the other day, and they went there, and, you know, a bunch of kids went there and just were telling people you shouldn't be here, you know? And what I'm saying in terms of what you're saying is that if you wanted to go there with a different type of experience, or a different type of, or if you wanted to be welcome, then maybe you should know a little bit. Maybe you should meet. Maybe you should know what's happening there. Because I shouldn't go to another neighborhood and just throw myself around in a way that's disrespectful. So what I say in terms of I can go anywhere,
right.
I do need to have a level of understanding of, you know, how do I want to make an impression? Do I want to be a jerk? You know, because I can go anywhere and be a jerk, or do I want to go somewhere and have a understanding of what the norms are there's all levels of it. So I'm just expressing what my and how I do it, because I do think everybody can go anywhere, and they should if they want.
So going back to Ozomatli when you started out, so early 90s then?
Mid-90s.
So how did you, because you've had different formations of the group, different numbers of people. So is there a core, and how did you guys come together? And
well, we're the six guys who are in the band now, which is the smallest version of the band over the past few years. They're all original guys. So we're the ones who just stuck around. And I mean, in the beginning, it was pretty much whoever showed up. It was a jam. There would be 15 people on stage.
Really?
Yeah, it was always different. We were the guys who just kept showing up. And with all the changes we've been through with different members, with being like a 10-person band for many years, to whittling it down to now being six, you know, we feel like we carry the torch, and we don't have an issue with the shifts of it, because I think it is because we're all original guys.
Right.
You know, we feel kind of rooted in this experience, and it's our experience, and so I think it's nothing we have to debate about with people. Yeah.
So you said you start with doing social justice shows.
Yeah.
Was that Ozomatli, or with this group of guys? Like, was it this loose format? Hey, let's go to this. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but now, years later, kind of social justice seems to be at the forefront of, is that an individual thing within the group, or is it an intention of the group?
I think it's kind of like, I think some of us would have been involved in things no matter what. So when we started playing for this particular labor strike, it was really just for that. It was like, how can you contribute? And it was, I think for some of us, it was cool to realize, oh, you mean actually playing music can be a part of that, you know? And it would maybe obvious to some people, you know, for some of us, it wasn't that obvious. Oh, like we could, like you can actually, this is our volunteerism in a way.
Right.
So cool, we can, you have a reason to charge for an event. And our vision has always been kind of, you know, we met like 2 hours before, and it was like, what are you going to play? And it was like, what do you know? And that's why the sound was so eclectic, because it wasn't really so much about bass on. It wasn't a master plan.
Right.
It was like, I know some Mexican folk songs. The other guys are like, I've never played Mexican folk songs. What are we going to do? You know, and these are the chords. Just pick a beat. Okay, I can adjust. Like, that's how it happened. So, and that's kind of, and with the idea of rocking the party for these particular people. So, and I think we've always had that. We still have that. We still want to get up. We still want to rock the party. But there's, the rocking the party is kind of, because in our opinion, because we all need it.
Yeah.
We all need a release. We all need to kind of celebrate. We all need to feel good. We all need to be some next to some stranger dancing.
Yeah.
You know, these are the things that, and if we're doing it in a form that maybe has a, it's because it's associated with a cause, I think it's much, you know, then people can maybe feel affirmed. But it's also, if people don't have that, maybe they can talk to one another, or maybe something that's going on we're going to talk about on stage, maybe there's something happening at an event that we support. It's we feel that we're just a part of kind of the momentum of all these things that happen, and we definitely on the sides of the have-nots, and definitely on the sides of that every human, you know, has a space and has a right, and that we should all be affirmed in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So, trying to think of the best way to ask this question, because when we talk about like social justice and going out and kind of standing up for a cause, it seems like every revolution, right, has either been led by or been steeped in the music of that revolution, like in the 60s. So do you see Ozomatli as being a soundtrack in some way for...
Sure. I mean, I think we're a long line of bands and musicians that have made that a clear part of what they do. And
it seems like there's so many bands kind of shy away. Like, I don't feel there's that same Woody Guthrie.
I just think that's normal for people.
Right.
I don't think there's a lot of people on the forefront, on the picket lines, like, you know. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like there's a lot of different bands, and there's some of them who are committed to these things and are out there kind of talking about it or taking stands and for various reasons and causes. And I think we're just one of them, you know. And we bring something maybe that's kind of unique out of where we're from, our particular story, our individual makeup. We got like a Jewish guy, we got a Japanese guy, we got a, you know, a Creole guy. We got three Mexicans with different kinds of like shades of the diaspora of the Mexican experience. So I think that's what's unique about us.
So when you look at your social justice like the causes that are close to your heart. Are there particular social justice causes that you as a group support, or is it each individual person saying, here's what I am about, let's support that? Like, how does that work as a group?
I think it's both. You know, sometimes we're actively part of a campaign. I mean, you know, I have done a lot of work at different levels on immigration issues. The band has also, over the years, there's been different things that we've done. We supported Bernie Sanders. We played on different rallies of his, and that was so much fun. And, you know, so I think it kind of just, we kind of fit into what we can do, because we don't, you know, sometimes we need to be home with our families.
Yeah.
And it's also just kind of what we want to do. I think for us, those causes, it's very important that we all agree. You know, and if some of us agree and some of us don't, it doesn't really work for us as a band. That doesn't serve us. So, and it's okay. You know, it's like we learned over the years that, you know, we have to feed this the momentum and kind of heart of this group. And we're all different. And if we move in agreement, it's much easier for us to be sincere, understand why we're doing things sometimes, and have fun, you know, doing it.
Well, and it sounds a little bit like a successful marriage. You know, they talk about the marriage has to be its own entity, and the people in the marriage have to feed the entity. Is it kind of like that? Like the band is...
I think as men, you know, I think we grew up with each other. I think we were all young, you know, and you know, no one ever tells you how to act, how to be, what the experience of life is. And it's crazy. It's crazy that even after, as long as the humans have been around, you know, these lessons that you may be able to say, or even your children may be able to see, it's still a little fuzzy until you go to it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the, you know, it's such a, you know, it what makes it all unique. At the same time, it's like, well, you know, you're gonna have to make some mistakes at least, and then, you know, and kind of understand tensions and understand what it means to be committed to something, and understand what it means to how in our instance, you know, a experience of like any relationship, you know, really being into it, going, and then going through a phase where you're not into each other. Mm-hmm. I think when you're younger, you have a tendency to, you know, be more about yourself, not see the whole picture, and then bust through that, and kind of we're like, man, I think we get along in a way that's really cool now, and it's we're very supportive of one another. We've all had personal issues, like everybody does, in our relationships with drugs and alcohol, with all sorts of stuff that we've helped each other get through. So that always feels really cool.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to my conversation with Raul Pacheco, one of the founding members of Ozo Motley. We had a chance to talk backstage at Live Oak a few years ago, and it just seemed appropriate today to revisit that conversation. I wasn't quite sure how to handle today. A lot of people are recognizing Blackout Tuesday as an opportunity to kind of step aside and make room in the social conversation for other voices to come forward. And I wasn't sure if I should just pause the show today or go in another direction. And I happened to hear Ozo Motley coming live from a protest in LA yesterday. And it reminded me that they've been doing this work and stepping forward for over 25 years. And so I thought Raul would be a good person to hear from. And if you aren't familiar with their music, they have been influential in introducing and maintaining a soundtrack to the revolution throughout the course of the band's history. So I wanted to play a bit of one of their songs, Love and Hope, before we go back to my conversation with Raul Pacheco. This is Ozo Motley. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be right back.
Up into my eyes, nothing to say. An open hand with scars can hide the pain away. What I can give is not enough to help him grow. How can I fulfill his needs and braces? Oh, the heart.
You're listening to Love and Hope by Oza Motley. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. We're going to jump back into my conversation with Raul Pacheco from Oza Motley. I'm talking about social revolution, life, and how he's been making a difference throughout his career and his personal life for many, many years. This is Raul Pacheco, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. So you mentioned being a group of men, and I'm glad you went there, because the whole idea of masculinity in our culture today is on the forefront, and there are no guides for healthy masculinity, really. I mean, very few. So how do you think you've grown as a man having to work within this group? Because a lot of groups, right, end up just tearing each other apart because the only model for masculinity is rage and violence and anger. And so do you feel like you've transcended that in some way and found a healthy masculinity within your group identity?
I think we're healthier. I think there are models, you know, that are healthy for men. I think that there's a push and pull. I think that it's not as common. It's not as mainstream as maybe like the women's movement or something. Right. And I think there's a reason for that. And I think part of, you know, and this is my own take on it. I think that, you know, like you're saying, you know, I think the strange thing about being a man is that, and this is my opinion, is that, you know, I think we need to be, there's these traditional roles of quote unquote strength or whatever, or, you know, providing or whatever, like all, and which I think come from, you know, a different era, but they're still very much here. And being, you know, being a sensitive in a way that, you know, is kind of, there's a real competition with that. And I think it is, men are starting to understand that, you know, in my opinion, the new man is kind of like strong and all those things, but extremely sensitive at the same time. And it's that balance in us. It's very confusing because that is the message that we don't, there are not a lot of examples of that, but there are some. And it is becoming something that is easier and more common for men to even talk about and to, and I think part of it is I don't know if it's the right thing to say, but I think women are better than men in many, you know, in so many ways that we have to kind of bow down and listen and understand things. And I think that, I think it's because we can't give birth.
Yeah. Well, women have traditionally in cultures been the keeper of birth and death, the great mysteries.
You can't create life.
No.
So there's this whole thing that's the major thing going on that we have no idea about. That we do not experience that. And it really, therefore, we don't truly understand it. We truly do not understand creation on that level. We truly do not. And so, you know, there's all sorts of things that we could come into to why we think the way we do. And I think that's basically it. And so having to, you know, having to kind of ask yourself, do you want to be a creator or a destroyer? And I think we're on the side of creators, but like everyone, we all make mistakes. I think, learning those aspects of expression that are destructive, and that could be for anybody, but I think within us as men, because we, in our specific group, because we have had issues with alcoholism, with drug, you know, all this stuff, that it's, you know, that kind of self-destruction, getting help for that, understanding that, trying to manage that in a different way. You know, for us as men, I think we're very supportive of being open to a different experience as a man. You know, I think we're lucky in that.
Well, and I think it's interesting because since I'm a psychotherapist, you know, I look at the masculine and feminine of the world, and I think for a lot of time, our issue is that we've blocked men out of the experience of the feelings and emotions. You know, we got so rigid in your job is to provide and our job is to nurture. And then it just became, to talk about divides in our culture, I mean, we have a huge gender divide. And so it's almost like men are having to fight to bring that into their experience.
like the fact that we're talking about this. I know. You know what I mean? So yeah. there is it is happening. Mm-hmm. But like you say, it is there will always be these aspects of roles because yes. it's naturally who we are. But like everything else, it needs to evolve. Yeah. And so I think more and more it is, you know, but it's a slow process, just like political change and just mm-hmm. like societal change is a lifetime experience, you know. And I and being older, I can realize that now, and I'm glad that there's, you know, revolutions start with young people, man, and that's a good thing, and that's why we need them, and as you know, because they want change now.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good, we need that energy. At the same time, me, I'm 48 years old. It's like I see the big picture, like, whoa, like I have to be fighting for this thing pretty much my whole life, in order for it to and create momentum. It there's a lot of people, if I'm on this train, you will see a difference, but it's going to take 60, 70 years.
Well, look at Bernie, right? I mean, it's a lifelong thing,
you
for
know
him.
And I think what I try to encourage for people and what I try to encourage within us and within myself, and when we're playing for specific events that are about that, like, hey, if you're in, you know, this is a long haul, man. Don't get discouraged. And anything you do is difficult. And I tell my kids this, you know, anything you choose, sometimes it's going to be really hard. So you might as well choose what you really love.
Exactly.
Because when you're on the downtrodden, like, this all sucks, I don't have any money, I don't want to be, like, if you're doing what you do, it's going to be easier to swallow that day. And if you're doing something that you just do not want to be doing, then that's like a whole weight on you in that moment that is way too crazy. And I don't know how I figured that out as a kid, but I was lucky, you know, to kind of, I think it's because I love so music so much. And it was like, I don't know, I was just like, no, I have to, you know, I'm committed to doing what I want to do. And then and in that energy, sometimes you also make wrong choices. And if you're called out, if you know, it's part of being a good person and being a man is, you know, is, oh, stopping and saying sorry, understanding what happened and moving on, you know, so.
So let's shift a little, because I don't want to take all your night, to talk a little bit about the mental health piece. And because you talk about, you know, being committed to the music. Yeah. So if you hadn't had music when you were 15, how do you think that would have changed you? And what has music brought to your mental health, if that's not too broad?
I think for me, it's kind of what I was talking about before. It was that thing I was very lucky to have as a young person that I knew some of us don't have that. You know, my daughter, like right now, like, seems like she's trying to find what that is, you know? And I'm like,
how old is she?
She's 19, you know?
Right, totally,
you know? And I'm like, you know, I just encourage her, like, hey, you know, try different things, or, you know, you don't have to know right now too. You know, we get all this pressure, and I'm, you know, I'm like, you know, it's all good. Like, you know, college and some, you know, didn't pass a class. I'm like, whatever, you know, like, maybe try, you know that sometimes things are just work sometimes. Mm-hmm. You got, you know, what do you got to do to pass a C? You know, it's all right to do 70% sometimes. If it's not what you want, like, don't worry about it. Don't.
And isn't part of college kind of peeling away what you don't want to do? There's a little of that.
You know, I think it's all these things. And when you're that young, it's hard to see it all. But, you know, so for me, that having that thing as a young person, it made my life easier. Mm-hmm. So I'm very lucky about that. And I never forget that, because I know not everybody does that. I think a lot of people do not until maybe later in life. And so it's always been easy for me to rely on this
to fall back on
joy.
Right. So even when you were going through your own struggles, you had something that was your identity,
It was a motivation to get through difficult times. Mm-hmm. You know, when this band first started, my girlfriend became pregnant, and it's like, whoa. And I just saw, like, well, okay, how committed I am. So I just hustled and figured out ways to have enough money, you know, so she was at least taken care of, and that the baby was provided for, and that we were, you know, I tried my best to be together in a way. And it was very challenging in many ways. I mean, it was really difficult in many ways, you know, to be around for my children when they were young. And so you know, and my own personal commitment to this is what helped me get through it and helped me to try to find ways to help my children and their mother, like, have some positive experience with it, you know.
So have you seen what happens when people, because again, with the mental health piece, yeah, you have this place to go, right? When yes, things are really tough, you got your music to kind of get lost in. Yeah. So have you seen for other people kind of being lost without that thing? Sure. And is that part of what motivates the social justice or the children and family?
Well, I think we all have those kinds of issues. We all have.
Everyone does.
Yeah, we all, and we all have those days, and I think, you know, and our ego is a trip because, you know, when you know, rejection is not, it's a difficult thing to understand. And how do you understand that it really isn't that personal as you think it is?
You or know? Is permanent.
Yeah, exactly. It's momentary. It'll pass. You know, but, you know, when we, you know, there's so many angles of stuff. You know, there's ideas of attachment. There's all these things. And we all need those things, you know, but at the same time, you know, that's the crazy thing, right? We're individuals in this giant world with all these people, but we're still stuck in our own heads, mm-hmm. you know? And how do we like manage that? And how do we interface in a way that is feels good? And when we're growing up, depending on those experiences, because some experiences can be very tough and very, difficult for people. There can be different types of abuse. I mean, that's, you know, how do you deal with that? And then some can be full of joy, but with different other types of like things that, you know, create issues for you as an adult. I mean, there's so many things that we go through that we have to wade through the rest of our lives. And how do we constantly work? I think I have children. I tell them it's important to have something that you love. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, it's important to not give up and to try things you've never tried. And I think if you feel lost in a sense, whatever that is, it, like, you know, almost embrace that, you know?
Well, and I would think too that the social justice piece, yep, because when we look at mental health, you know, being connected to something bigger than our own,
yes,
problems,
yep, yep.
How do you see that playing out?
Well, for me, it feels good. Mm-hmm. It feels good to do something for other people. And I think if you've never done that, that may be something you should try, because it's not about, you know, people think that people who are activists, or if they're not, oh, they're so crazy or so weird or so, you know, loud or something. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be that, but there is something, it's just their thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, but I think helping people really in any way, like you're saying, something other than yourself, it really, it just feels good. There's not an explanation for it, and you have to experience it. And it's one of those things that maybe you should try.
Well, and you talked about at the beginning with Boyle Heights, yeah, and the community having its, yeah, sense of resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
It almost, like, it transcends the individual's struggle,
yeah,
and everyone feels united.
Well, there's a political history in that part of the city. You know, in the prior to the 40s, it was a very mixed community. It's a really interesting story. It was a place in Los Angeles that had no land covenants, which means that in certain parts of LA, like in other parts of the country, like in other parts of the world, if you were a certain race, you could not, or religion, you could not buy land there.
Yeah.
They had those laws in the
government
in the U.S., and people seem to forget that that wasn't that long ago. And that particular community had free land covenants. So there was African Americans, there was a large Jewish community, there was a Japanese, there was some Chinese, some Italians, Mexicans. You could own a house. So that was kind of, you know, there was this big street there. It was called Brooklyn Avenue, you know, because there was a lot of Jewish people there. And the incredible building still, really interesting part of Los Angeles. After World War II, primarily, primarily came a Mexican part of town. Jewish people left into the valley. There was kind of a different, there's still remnants of all that. And then there was a period in the 50s when they were building Los Angeles, and Boyle Heights is kind of boxed in by the most freeway in any part of the world.
Okay.
The most freeway miles.
Just like crossing
There's a 710, the 5, the 10, the 110, the 60, and the 5.
And then Boyle Heights sits down in
It's right in the middle.
Okay.
And they went through a period of eminent domain where the city took their land and the county and the state and made the freeways. And it was that fight that created this political infrastructure. There was people who were like fighting and they lost. And that was like in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, what are we going to do now? And that became part of, in line what you were seeing in all over different parts of the country, with all these kinds of movements. And that was one that was right in line with all of it. And that became like the center of Chicano politics in I think the biggest probably movement in Southern California, although it was happening all over, but definitely in Los Angeles. Yeah.
You've been listening to my conversation with Raul Pacheco, founding member of the band Ozo Motley. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And for today, I thought it'd be nice to make space for another voice on the air. And I really enjoyed this conversation with Raul 3 years ago backstage at Live Oak Music Festival. And it was interesting and timely then because of all of the interest around immigration and Black Lives Matter. At the time, things kind of rose quickly and then seemed to disappear. But really, as Raul said in our conversation, things didn't disappear. They just were gaining speed to build up again. And so we're going to close out today with a little bit more of my conversation with Raul Pacheco. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hadn't grown up in Boyle Heights, you would be activated and inspired the way you are.
I have no idea. I have no idea what I'd be like. And I think that where I'm from, I think my whole experience really helped me because I'm very like I'm funny. Well, people will make fun of me. I talk about this a lot. I'm very proud of where I'm from. But you wouldn't get that notion of that in my house.
Okay.
My house is very like. You know, it's almost like minimalist. You know, there's not a lot of stuff in there. It's very
You don't have modern. Che Guevara signs.
No, I mean, I did at one point, but it's very modern in a lot of ways. You know, my friends will make fun of me, you know, about that. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know. This is just who I am. But
it's almost like you've internalized the movement and you don't need to have it
displayed. I talk about it. I support people. I show up places. I make music for it. I support causes. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but just thinking about it right now, it's like it does make me laugh too.
So if someone walked in your house, they'd have no idea that you had sang at a Bernie rally or out.
Probably not. No, yeah. Probably not.
So tell me about the children, because the Ozo Kids concert, how did this come about that you said, okay, we're going to put time into encouraging children in nature and in music? Well, what's the genesis?
I think we were getting older and there were fans who were like, we can't go because we got to take care of our babysitters. And we were all going through that ourselves. And it was just an idea that our drummer at the time came up with. And we looked into it. And there was both a reason that was like, wow, this is like people really do this. They actually like do shows and make records. And hey, you know, as long as we've been around, we're always trying to have something new to do. And it felt like, wow, let's try this. And I think for us it helped us as songwriters we didn't have to be that band.
You know, so esoteric and maybe just more fun? Or?
Yeah, and just talk about like skateboarding and like going to the movies and like all these subjects. It just became like this, it was just a funny thing that we did. And I thought we made a great record actually. So, you know, we don't do it always, but to have kids come up, like today there was a kid who came early who knew the songs, mm-hmm. who was asking for specific songs. We were like, oh, we're gonna do it just for you. And I talked to his parents and he was great. And I think for us, we remember as young people, it was adults who said yes to us. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, I want to play guitar. It wasn't like, you know, I want to be a musician. It wasn't the people who were like, you know, oh, you know, you're going to be a poor loser or something. It was the people who were like, hell yeah, like, what do you got to do? Like, hey, do you have a guitar? Well, let's try to get you one. Or like, you know, it was people who were supporting this kind of, just this interest. And for us, we remember that. And we remember that in our schools, we remember certain teachers. And there's no way we would have been musicians if we didn't have that. And, or parents that didn't have that. And so... That really resonates for us because we think everybody needs that, no matter what age you are. But there's just something special about young people that we remember.
So is it about bringing music to the kids, or is it about exposing them to the experience of being at a show? Like, or is it all of that?
I think it is all of those things. You know, we play this whole role that's very different. The whole front of the stage is only like kids. We're like, you know, and I think we want them to have an experience with music too that's very unique and different, that's really in front of their face and like shared, and not to think that that's some weird or experience, but there's also something just very natural for all of us about playing music. It's why we still play music. I mean, you know, it makes us happy, and there's, we need it as much as anybody else, you know?
Right, almost it's like the kids inspire you into the next generation.
Yeah, it's just super cool. I mean, you know, I think there's all those things that I said, but there's also just that this is part of being human, this type of expression, and we want you to feel it, you know, no matter, and if you're a 10-year-old, let's rock together, man.
Yeah, I love that. So when you talk about,
you've been listening to my conversation with Raul Pacheco from Ozo Motley. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And as I started the show today saying, I have been conflicted about how to address what is going on in the country right now. I'm not sure which direction to go, and I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I don't want to say, I don't want to be silent. And so I decided to offer you this conversation to bring another voice into the discussion, into the world, and kind of to honor what's going on with Blackout Tuesday, which was started by two music executives who wanted to lead an effort in the music community to pause normal business and operations in observance, in their words, in observance of the longstanding racism and inequality that exists from the boardroom to the boulevard. And so we've been encouraged today, June the 2nd, to stay away from self-promotion on our social media pages and to make space for content that is really connected to the movement and to Black Lives Matter. And just as an aside, there has been some calls from activists to ask people to please not use the hashtag Black Lives Matter because it's clogging up the feeds where lots of important information is being shared. So to avoid utilizing that hashtag so that videos and resources and documentation of injustice can be in the forefront of social media to get the word out, to keep the momentum flowing forward. My daughter Kelly, who has been kind of my resource, this is her passion is social justice, and she handed me a couple resources that she felt I needed to follow up on, and so I thought I would share them with you. The first is to read the book White Rage, and to then have discussions with friends about the book. That's a nonfiction book that was written by Emory University professor Carol Anderson. And the full title is White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. And then Kelly suggested that I watch the film 13th on Netflix, and then to make a donation to the Minnesota Freedom Fund, one of many organizations that actually pay cash bails for those who cannot afford their own, because pretrial incarceration perpetuates wealth-based discrimination, which is a huge contributor to mass incarceration, which happens to be unique to the U.S. and the Philippines. And then finally, check out Campaign Zero, which is working to create a world where police don't kill people, by limiting police interventions, improving community interactions, and ensuring accountability. So that's Campaign Zero. You've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and although we didn't take calls today, I'm happy to read your emails to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast, and always send us a message through Facebook or Instagram after Blackout Tuesday. I want to finish out today with another song from Ozo Motley to kind of keep in the spirit of today's conversation and to keep the momentum moving forward. This is Who Discovered America. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Discovered America. America. Who discovered America?
Thanks for tuning in for The Reluctant Therapist. This show will be available to listen to later today on our website, kcbx.org, where you can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from kcbx.org. Find us on social media. We're at kcbxfm.